Well, hopefully the weather will be better in Minnesota today in Minneapolis. Quite a night last night at the ballpark. And if you're just joining us, we've been on since 7 a.m. today. And last night the Giants lose 3-2 in 10 innings and 10 torturous innings last night. This may be the toughest loss of the year. But we welcome in the voice of baseball in the Bay Area, and that is Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, good morning.
Hi, Marty. How you doing?
Well, I'm all right. It was kind of a crazy night last night, I must say. I came back on to do some of the rain delay here, you know, in the eighth inning. So that was a little different.
Well, yeah, it was. I was trying to keep track of the game. I was out at the Coliseum, and, you know, you read the play-by-play account, and it's just insane. And, you know, I got home and went and watched the highlights of it. But, you know, it was just the things that are tormenting this team, fundamental mistakes like Gonzalez, very dumb base running there, the bullpen that is faltering and not enough hitting, you know, all came to the fore. It's happening way too often, and that's just where the Giants are right now, just not good enough.
Yeah, it was a tough game last night, and Brandon Crawford once again in the middle of a defensive lapse as he cuts a ball off. Was he communicating with Longoria? They had Arraez hung up. He would have been out. Kepler was not going. He would have been the first run, and Crawford held the ball, and Kepler scored. Arraez got to third, and then things fell apart after that. So you're right. It was a sort of almost like the comedy of errors last night. Whatever could go wrong went wrong. But you had a big night last night. So folks who weren't with us yesterday, you got the Ron Bergman Award, and the A's give that out. Wonderful writer, Bergie. We loved him. And it's for a meritorious service of covering the A's. And you were out at the Coliseum last night and got the award. What was that like?
Oh, it was very, very special. I mean, the whole thing kind of hit me by surprise. And when I heard about it, you know, about a month ago. But, you know, I'm out there with my good friend Dave Cavill, who was very gracious. You know, we've had our disagreements, and you know, all of us columnists have been covering the A's, but the A's were just spectacularly good to me. And, you know, Michael Zagaris and Brad Manchin were out there snapping photos, and I felt really important, you know, for about 5 minutes. I got to go on the air with both the radio and the TV crews, which was fun. And probably the best of it was they gave me a suite, and I brought three couples from fabulous Montana out here on the coast, three baseball mad couples, and my wife Martha, the eight of us, were in there watching a great game with the Yankees. And it ended just improbably beautiful, and it was really a great night. I was not in touch with the Giants, but that was okay in a lot of ways.
Yeah, believe me, you didn't miss anything last night.
No.
Although I will say that Cobb pitched a pretty good game. He had traffic, but he got out of it. And Sonny Gray gave the typical five innings and good stuff. And, you know, it was 1-0. Giants had one hit, you know, heading into the rain delay. So it was an odd game last night, I'll just say that. But good. I'm glad you had a good time last night at the Coliseum. Well, Stephen Vogt hit a home run, didn't he, to tie the game up in the bottom of the 10th?
Yeah, they really screwed up a play where a pitch got away from, you know, the wild pitch got away from Murphy, and he tried to flip home, get a guy, and the Yanks wind up with two runs. They got one hit, like, the whole night.
Wow.
But now they're up two, and we're sort of getting ready to pack up, and all of a sudden, Vogt really just jacks one out of there. And he was very emotional after the game. He said, "I feel like a little kid again," and he's such a great guy, one of the great guys in baseball. All of a sudden, they're still playing, and the Yankee fans are all disgruntled. You've been hearing from them all night, but now they're in a little bit of trouble, and the A's pulled it out on an error. I mean, it was kind of the typical, the way the game went. And, of course, the game didn't end because they had a challenge. That's always nice when you have guys leaping out of the dugout, and all of a sudden they're standing around going, "Oh, ooh, wait a minute." You know? But that's never good. But it was to me, I mean, I haven't been – at the Coliseum, but I mean, it's probably the best A's game of the year considering the opposition. It was a big crowd.
Yeah,
you know, they had a light show
crowd
afterward.
I
don't know what it looked like, about 35,000 to me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it definitely looked great. I mean, they're all the sections, they had a lot of people in it, and that makes such a big difference. You know, the A's players deserve that, and they very rarely get it.
Boy, well, I'm glad you had a good night. You deserve it. As I said, Cooperstown is next, so that's our next goal to get that done. But A's fans, they're the best, And I've said it for years. They're like the old Candlestick fans. They know the game, and all they want to do is be loved a little bit. And that's what the A's ownership has had trouble doing over the years. All right, good for you last night. Well, a couple of things around baseball. One, I got into it yesterday, Bruce, and I'll start off the Sunday morning with it. Position players pitching. And I know we touched on it just briefly over the last couple of weeks, but seeing Austin Wynn's pitch the other night with the Ephus pitch, the blooper pitch, and I just felt the game was a farce. And I said it yesterday, I'll say it again. I think if you get to that point in the game where you've got to put someone like that in, it should be game over. We quit. Here's the white flag. Let's move on.
Yeah, you know, when it's, I don't know how far this goes back, probably like, you know, 1890 or something, but it was always kind of a novelty when it happened. Just, oh, wow, look at this, you know, and if somebody like Pablo Sandoval got out there and could, who, you know, could really throw a reasonable looking pitch, he could even throw a lefty if he wanted him to. There was a nice element of novelty to it, but it's way too common now. The element of farce is almost automatic. It's tiresome. I know Dwayne Kuiper's been hammering it on the Giants broadcast, and good for him. He thinks baseball is going to do something about it. I don't know what you do about it, really. But it's just too much. And you'd hate to think that some kind of record, was sustained or broken, because a guy was up there facing a cake pitch that he knew he could hit. Not every big leaguer is ready to hit like a 55-mile-an-hour pitch because they just never see it. But more often than not, they just tee it up. And if somebody, well, let's say a guy's got four homers in the game, and now this guy's out there throwing, he's got another at bat, and he hits his fifth homer off the second baseman. And the first guy ever to hit five homers in a game did it under very bizarre circumstances.
Well, the problem for me is that's one issue of, records. But, now they have position players pitching in games you're winning because they don't want to bring a reliever into that. So now all of a sudden both teams have position players pitching. It's not a novelty. I don't like it. And if you have to do that, I say the game's over. I say forfeited. Not forfeited, but it's a rain delay, rained out, whatever.
That's what the manager's basically saying. This game's over, and this is how we're going to end it. I totally agree. I don't think anybody could really argue with that.
Yeah. Oh, good. I got a good point in today. Good. You know, it's Sunday morning. We've been up very early this morning getting the show
not
going.
Bad.
So,
yeah.
So a lot to think about. Other things that happened in baseball this week. Artie Moreno, Bruce, is putting the team up for sale. And it made me think of owners, sole owners of franchises. You don't have many. You've got Stephen Cohen in New York. We'll talk about the Mets in a minute. But Artie Moreno's had the club for a long time, and he takes a lot of heat for the demise of the Angels, and he's putting the club up for sale.
Yeah, there's my next-door neighbor, one of the guys who was out there with me at the park last night, is a big Angels fan from Orange County, and I think he's got a massive hangover just from celebrating that, as well as a fun night at the Coliseum. But, yeah, Artie Moreno, he shows up, he's got the sombrero. He's a Mexican kid from the barrio in Tucson, and he lowers the beer prices. And, boy, this guy, what a breath of fresh air he is. But he didn't sustain it. There was a real arrogance about him. He made decisions over the recommendations of his baseball people because he thought he knew more than they did. Never a good idea from the owner's box, especially if it's somebody who doesn't get or feel the game. He did not treat his staffers well. He let down the Latino community in a huge way. There's a great column by a Latino columnist in the LA Times talking about how he completely lost their faith, and don't let your sombrero get in the way of you getting out the door. The Angels, they've been so disappointing. Here's a team with Trout and Ohtani, and they're just so ordinary. That's hard to do. They never get the pitching right. They'll have Ohtani. They had Syndergaard for a while. Whatever. They can't get the pitching right. They haven't drafted a position player who comes up and is a star in 12 years.
Wow.
That's and their international record isn't any better. So It was just a disaster that it can only be fixed when the owner sells. It's the kind of thing we've been waiting for John Fisher to sell the A's, for heaven's sake. You know, you're just at the mercy of this guy, but it finally happened in Anaheim, and things are going to get better.
Boy, good. Yeah, yeah, he's taken a lot of heat, and, of course, all the drug issues that with the players, and all, that's an undercurrent,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, the politics of the stadium have been a mess, and, yeah, it's just it's
yeah, he's got a lot,
multi-level,
a lot of trouble.
Horrible.
Yeah. Yep, a lot of trouble there. And it also made me think, look, of the Minnesota Twins. You know, there was a time, of course, Target Field is beautiful, and there was a lot of rain last night, but the Minnesotans like to be outdoors in the summer, and they wanted a stadium like this. But there was a point in time, remember, they were going to contract Minnesota. Remember, they were going to get rid of Minnesota and Tampa Bay, and,
and
because people weren't coming out, and Carl Pollard or something saved it. But this franchise goes back to Calvin Griffith.
Walter Johnson, you know, absolutely. I mean, Washington Senators.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a sole owner, family ownership. And, you know, he moved them to Minnesota because he made all sorts of racist comments about the fans in Washington, D.C. And they ended up being the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, I haven't been to that park. I mean, when I was covering the A's, I went to the Metrodome just countless times. And every time. Except for the World Series, which was unbelievable because the sound level was so intense that you got caught up in it. You didn't care that you were indoors, and it was the fall, and it was a little chilly outside. But normally, to see the Minnesotans in there, indoors, in the middle of summer playing baseball was just, it was sad, really. And the public address announcer was always way too loud. Bang, second! You know?
Was it right behind home plate? I think they had him in a little booth behind home plate.
Yeah, not batting, batting second. Just deafening.
Baggie. How about the baggie for the right field wall that had like a garbage bag?
Oh, yeah, and, you know, balls would go off the ceiling. Is it in play or what the hell? I mean, really bad. They've made the same nice move in Seattle. It's another place I haven't been to yet, although we're going there. I'm going to take a little trip up there. My daughter Molly just moved up to Seattle. We're going to go. That'll be my first day. So their new ballpark. And once again, I went to millions of games there, and it was in the Kingdom. It's just as bad, you know, even worse. I mean, but anyway, it's great to see cities do it right. You know, when we're sitting here in Oakland waiting for a new stadium that may never happen. But, you know, it's great to see franchises that actually get it done.
Yeah, yeah. Target Field revived the franchise, like Oracle Park revived the Giants.
Yeah.
And Safeco, which is now T-Mobile Park, you know, you can't keep up with all this stuff. You'll love it. I love Safeco. I thought it was a beautiful park.
Mm-hmm. And the Mariners are a tremendous story. The crowd will be good. They're in the race, and it's very exciting.
Boy, Rich Liebman says 36,000 last night at the Coliseum. So
that was close.
Yeah, yeah, very good. Good guess. Very good guess. The last part about Minnesota, of course, this is our last game today. Giants hoping not to get swept. You know, the New York Giants almost ended up in Minneapolis. Horace Stoneham was leaving the Polo Grounds. There's no doubt about it. He was leaving. The situation became untenable for him in New York. He was going to go to Minneapolis because that was a Giants farm system. Willie Mays played there, of course, in 1950. 51, rather. And, you know, then O'Malley got involved with L.A., and next thing you knew, Horace went to San Francisco. But we could be looking at the Minneapolis Giants right now.
Yeah, that is so unthinkable. You can't even sort that out in your head, what that would have meant. I mean, Minnesota is a heck of a baseball town. But, you know, San Francisco, even, you know, before the Giants came out here, was a great baseball town. You know, the Seal Stadium scene with the Pacific Coast League. There were neighborhood teams all over the city. It was a thriving, great sport that not a lot of people know that. You know, the 2010 Giants did not make this a baseball town. It was always a very good baseball town, and we've been able to enjoy, you know, big league ball since '58, and it's just it's a blessing. But yeah, that would have been. I'm sure Mays probably wouldn't have minded too much. I mean, he doesn't know from San Francisco back then, and he did know he hit like 470 in Minneapolis or whatever he did. But yeah, we cut a break when O'Malley got involved there.
Yeah, 477, as Willie will tell you,
He did hit four.
Oh, he'll let you know that. I made a mistake once when we used to do our shows together. I said, well, you hit 472. And he said, no, I hit 477. Okay. All right.
I think he hit a ball that actually went through the fence there. I mean, some of the stuff he did in his youth was truly mind-blowing. But, yeah.
And Bill Madden, you know, we love Bill. He was on yesterday. New York Daily News, and he brought up the point about this, about Mays in Minnesota. He said, you know, Horace Stoneham sent a letter and published it in the newspaper apologizing to the fans in Minneapolis for taking Mays up to the big leagues, and that's how important Mays was in that part of the, you know, for that season.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine, you know, sitting in Minneapolis and, you know, you're not that You might be familiar with a little bit minor league ball, but you may not be that much in touch with it. You know, you're more involved in football. You know, the Gophers. You know, and all of a sudden Mays comes to town and it's just a revelation. I mean, in every respect, as we all know here, every phase of the game, he was astounding. I mean, if I'm living there, I go out to the park every night to see this guy. You know. And that was kind of the early birth of big league ball there, to see Mays and just to have Stoneham flirting with the town. It was really interesting, but you know it wound up being a nice story, and the Senators franchise survives.
Mm-hmm, it did, and I think it's thrived in Minnesota, even though it had some dry periods. Two tough World Series wins, and the place went nuts. You know, in that 87 World Series, they won all the games at home, and the Cardinals won their games at home, and the Twins won the World Series. Did you go to the 87 one?
Yeah, I covered that top to start to finish, and I've never experienced a crowd like that. You know, the Warriors crowd in 07 was unbelievable, but this was, you know, times four in numbers, and you know, the indoor setting really amplified it. And you got Jack Morris going against Smoltz, and it's many of the best games you've seen. The Twins played so many amazing games there, and geez, the atmosphere in there, it just gave you the chills. Very, very memorable, right up there with my World Series memories for sure.
Yep, very good. Well, I'm glad we could talk about Minnesota. And, of course, they go to try to sweep the Giants today, and Giants really have – it's been an awful road trip. I think they're hitting something like 170 on the road trip, and they don't drive in many runs, not many home runs. So they're teetering now because the Padres come in tomorrow, and it's Clevinger in there and Blake Snell and Musgrove and – Rodon and Logan Webb, and here comes Wood on Wednesday. So for whatever you want to call it, they are 7.5 back of San Diego now. This becomes somewhat of almost like a life support series.
Yeah, well, they really need Rodon to win the opener, you know, because they need to sweep the series really to feel good about themselves and win at 2 out of 3. But Rodon, that's gonna set the tone, they hope. And, you know, he's obviously very capable of it. But the Padres have revived themselves a little bit. Soto got back in the lineup yesterday after missing almost a week with a bad back. And Drury and Will Myers are hitting. You know Machado's going to hit. You know Soto's going to hit. And it's kind of interesting to see what they've done with the bullpen. They're giving Hader an extended rest out of the closer's role. They got a one-run lead yesterday in Kansas City. They go to Robert Suarez in the eighth, and Nick Martinez in the ninth, and they close it out.
Yep. Yeah, they're going to do that. Nick Martinez at least has some control. I did see Hader pitch last week. They gave him an inning. He looked much better, I will tell you that.
He struck out the side. No walks.
Yep, he definitely looks better. A couple of things in baseball that I want to touch on with you just a little bit. Did you see the throw that Orestes Aquino made from Cincinnati to the plate?
Geez, yeah. Wow. It was like Dave Parker, Jesse Barfield kind
Wasn't
of throw.
It? Yeah, that was good analysis there of Barfield or Dave Parker. This is in deep right field, Bruce.
Yeah, way out there. Yeah,
he threw a guy out at the plate on one bounce right to the plate.
Yeah, great stuff, and everybody was shocked. I mean, the run was in. it's like where do we go from here? And where'd that come from? Clemente-like going to the corner and with a miracle throw.
That was worth. That's worth looking up on YouTube, MLB, wherever you look. Just look up the Aquino throw from a couple of days ago. The other one I watched when I was watching the Twins this week, this Framber Valdez for Houston. This guy's terrific. He's terrific.
He's great every time. I just love how Dusty's got a. He's got a heck of a rotation. You know, starts with Verlander, but it goes deep. It goes five deep. It's the reason they're playing so well. You got to hand it to the Orioles for winning a couple in Houston. They're a great story too. But yeah, Valdez has this fantastic stuff, and they run a great starter out there every night. And it's going to be, you know, we were talking yesterday about the shortage of off days in the in the postseason. I think Houston's going to be very tough because you know they can go five nights in a row on you.
Yeah, McCullers, Urquidy, Garcia, Valdez, Verlander. I think they're the best team in baseball that I've seen.
I do, too.
A big deal in New York as we rush through this. Willie Mays got his number retired by the Mets yesterday. A huge deal. New York made a big deal about it.
Well, it was Old Timers Day, and they got like 60 former Mets out there for that. I mean, how special was that? But I think that the highlight for a lot of people was that they retired Mays' number. And, you know, they're very particular about retiring numbers there. He was only, I think, the seventh one. And, you know, that's, this franchise goes back a long time. Keith Hernandez recently got that honor, which is spectacular. But to honor Mays, who is, you know, he's remembered finishing out his career in New York, you know, the bizarre fact that he was traded by the Giants, but it was sort of appropriate that he finished in New York. And everybody remembers, you know, him stumbling in center field in the World Series. But the fact is, in that 73 season, as the Mets got to the World Series, you talk to the guys on that team, they said Mays was completely just invaluable. Mm. Not just occasional key hit, but just dispensing advice. He was so smart about the game, things to anticipate, things to know about the other team, about yourself, about so many things. They, you know, guys like Seaver and Koosman just raved about Mays' influence on that. And, you know, Willie wasn't able to make this ceremony, but he read a statement, and you've got the whole history of the Mets out there in uniform as, you know, another great New York moment there.
Come on, they brought Jay Hook out. Come on, 85 years old, Jay Hook.
They really did have everybody. Yeah,
that's correct, Jay Hook. Yeah. I remember him well from the Cincinnati Reds. All right,
I was looking, 1967. I was looking for Elio Chacon, you know. Go ahead.
Well, then Cepeda would throw him out. No, Willie. I guess Willie got into it with Elio Chacon. But Cepeda was part of that too. Mm-hmm. All right, 1967, August 28th. Ken Harrelson, the Hawk, is released by the A's, and the Red Sox pick him up, and, of course, they win the pennant and go to the World Series.
Yeah, typical Charlie Finley, right? It's the Kansas City A's. He's got Harrelson, good young ball player, but Finley was doing all kinds of weird stuff. He fired Alvin Dark out of nowhere. Finley wanted Alvin Dark to banish one of his pitchers. I think it was Lou Krause. You're not pitching anymore. And Dark said, screw that. He's pitching. And Harrelson backed Dark in a very, you know, forceful way, and next thing you know, Finley just said, well, you're out of here then. So the miracle is that Harrelson hooks up with the 1967 Red Sox in August. They're gonna, you know, Conigliaro's out. He was hit in the head by a fastball, and his career was severely curtailed. He couldn't play for a couple of years. Now Harrelson's the right fielder. They win the pennant. They go to the World Series, and Harrelson's first game there in August of 67. It's Yankee Stadium, the packed house. He's hitting behind Yaz and George Scott and Reggie Smith, and he homers in his first at bat off Bill Monbiot. You know, I mean, Harrelson was he was a guy for the moment. And you know what's amazing about Harrelson? As much as we loved him as a broadcaster, it was terrible to see that he passed away. But the following year, 1968, that was the year of the pitcher. There was only one 300 hitter in the entire American League, and that was Yastrzemski at 301. Mm-hmm. Everybody, it was all about pitching. And Ken Harrelson has his best season of his career. He hits 35 homers. He's third in the MVP voting. He drives in 109, leads the league in RBIs. It's like everything was normal for him. But a big, big, big personality. I loved Harrelson. God, what a great storyteller! The greatest voice you could ever imagine, really engaging. He was a fling homer for the White Sox, but he had so much style that it just was okay, always in my mind.
Yep, I agree with you. One of my favorites, Ken Harrelson. On today's date, the Red Sox get him, and then it became a real story. Boy, great to talk to you this morning. Thanks for getting up early. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week. It's Phillies Giants next weekend.
Okay. We'll talk then, Marty. Thanks a million.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. All right. More coming up. Bill Carey and I'll chat right after this.